Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Friday, June 18th. On today's episode of the Roundup, we're going to talk about the market for physicians and how the laws of supply, demand, and competition affect that market. Specifically, we're going to discuss the latest annual report from the Association of American Medical Colleges on the projected shortage of physicians and pushback from organized medicine to physician assistants wanting to be called physician associates. Making sense of it all on today's show are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning? Dave?
I'm somewhat stunned, Dave. Congress and President Biden created a new federal holiday in the last week, and we're celebrating it today. Happy Juneteenth, everybody.
Thank you. Julie, how about you? How are you?
Well, I'm just happy that we are processing through the Juneteenth issues. That's a good thing. But I'll say on a more personal note, it was 101 at my house yesterday, so I'm hot.
Goodness. Yeah, we did finally get some rain out here in Chicago, so that helped a little bit. Now, before we talk about the physician market, I wanted to ask you both whether you've been treated by a physician assistant, and if so, what your experience was. Dave, ever been seen by a PA for anything? Any hesitancy seeing a PA for primary care?
I'm sure I have, but I have trouble telling the difference between PAs and nurse practitioners. So nothing really stands out.
Julie, how about you? Any visits with PAs? Any concerns about seeing a PA?
So funny, Dave, that you just said that, because I had to actually look up who I'd seen at One Medical, and I've also seen nurse practitioners there and at my OB office, but never a PA. So I'm confused.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Our neighborhood urgent care center is crawling with PAs, so chances are if you go in, you will see one. The last one that I saw was a former Army medic, so I definitely think he could handle my bronchitis. I mean, I could handle my bronchitis if I can write a prescription for an inhaler, but I can't yet. Maybe in the future, we'll see how things go. All right. Let's talk about physician shortages. Dave, give us a short overview of the AAMC report. Tell us what market forces are at work here. And most importantly, what does it say about the state of our healthcare system?
The AAMC's seventh annual study projects a shortage between 37,800 and 124,000 physicians by 2034. Here's the shortfall breakdown. Between 17,800 and 48,000 PCPs, and between 21,000 and 77,100 specialists. So even more specialist shortfalls than primary care physician shortfalls, which is what we hear the most about. The driving forces behind the shortfalls are an aging population and the retirement of large numbers of the existing physician workforce. Secondary forces include increased funding for medical education, more slots for doctors. So actually their number is a little lower this year than it was last year. And then secondly, as we just talked about, the increasing numbers of PAs and advanced practice RNs. COVID, not surprisingly, touched this report in a couple of ways. First, as it relates to social determinants of health, the nation would require, according to their estimates, between 102,400 and 180,400 new physicians today to address underserved populations, largely in rural and inner city communities. It also calls for more research into the impact of COVID on physician well-being, burnout, practice patterns, and supply. So what do I think about these projections? First, Dave, I'm shocked, just shocked that the AAMC projects a massive physician shortage. Their analysis assumes the supply and demand for physicians to be in equilibrium in 2019, except for PCPs and psychiatrists. That assumption of equilibrium is absurd on its face, with as much as a third of healthcare being delivered in this country today being unnecessary. There is way too much specialty care in America and way too little chronic care. I once had a large system CFO from Minnesota tell me that the Twin Cities had 25 neurosurgeons, but only needed 6. His answer was to put them all in a room and keep them there until they worked it out. But I digress. The biggest problem with the AAMC projections is that they assume the future will be like the present. My favorite example of this type of thinking is the great manure crisis of 1894, when the Times of London predicted the streets of London would be covered by 9 feet of horse manure within 50 years. They, of course, neglected to incorporate the coming of the automobile in their projections. So I'm on record as saying that medicine will change more in the next 10 years than it has in the last 100 years. Medicine today is still practiced as established during the Flexner Revolution in the 1920s, hospital-centric, physician-centric, fee-for-service payment, and almost all resources going into treatment and almost no resources going into prevention. Today, 97% of healthcare resources go into treatment and only 3% go into prevention. That percentage allocation will shift dramatically as advances in technology and genetics enable medicine to get much better at identifying and addressing diseases before they manifest symptoms. More of the same status quo thinking as embodied in the AAMC projections will lead to more of the same dismal health outcomes that we currently experience. Undertreatment, overtreatment, fragmentation, higher costs, declining life expectancy, and a very, very frustrated public. You know, sounds like we need a customer revolution in healthcare.
Thanks, Dave. Or a medical thunderdome, right? 25 specialists enter, 6 leave.
There you go.
All right, Julie, what's your take on this new AAMC report? If you're a customer, what should you be concerned about? What should you not be concerned about?
I'm starting to hate the fact that Dave and I agree on so much, but I'm totally channeling the same energy, Dave. And, you know, this is not a new story. And honestly, it depends upon if you're a consumer, it depends upon what kind of consumer you are. If you're white and at least middle class and living near an urban area, you know, chances are because our population's growing and we're seeing a lot more docs towards retirement, you're probably going to feel longer waits for your doctor's appointment. And you may also experience a more constrained visit in some ways. Physicians attempt to handle more throughput of patients. But that's pretty much the opposite of what we're trying to do with patient experience efforts today, right? So it's all frustrating. But this is already happening, right? And I agree with Dave, the numbers feel very scary, but I think there's a lot we can do about it. So let me then just say, if you're a consumer who is not white, middle class, living in an urban area, you're thinking about health equity. The issues today are already grave. Janice Orlowski from the AAMC, I love this quote. She said, if everyone had the same access to physicians as those who are living in an urban center, white and not low income, we would still need more than 180,000 physicians to build equity today. That's not 15 years from now. So what I actually do think is a problem in general is our physician availability in rural areas, serving underserved, thinking about the racial and ethnic diversity of our workforce to be able to actually effectively treat the population that we have growing in the United States. So the equity issues we're dealing with, you know, are definitely significant. But I'll get on my soapbox now. I hate to be a broken record, but I find that this is my role here now. The role of technology is tailor-made for this situation. We can't possibly educate our way out of this situation. We can do a lot more with education, and we can do a lot more with smart education. There are plenty of new medical schools and new medical school curriculum that are really trying to focus on that issue. But if we think about taking more of a systems approach here, instead of taking a very kind of cottage industry approach, we would be thinking about where could you use AI and data to manage a more preventative posture with consumers? And then when it's necessary, using that same tool set to triage consumers into the right side of care, which, by the way, is called a digital front door, right? That's what we're trying to do. And we'd empower the less clinically skilled team members with more data-driven intelligence to treat patients. We're trying to do that too. We'd figure out what types of surgery can be most robotically enabled immediately. And we are using robots in surgery today, but are we doing so at a pace that actually really makes sense? So there's so many ways that we can be using digital technology to get ourselves out of the situation. And the AAMC is just living in the dark ages.
Interesting. Technology to the rescue. Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments?
She's making me think of Jethro Tull living in the past. And of course, Julie, we're counting on you to fund the companies and drive the progress that gets these reports off the front page. The most discouraging thing I've heard in the last couple of years related to Kaiser Permanente's decision to build a new medical school, now just opened this year, the Tyson School of Medicine. They went through a detailed cost-benefit analysis 5-6 years ago and concluded that it would be easier to build a school and train their own doctors than to re-educate new physicians coming out of medical school in their vertically integrated delivery platform. I mean, just think about that, that the acculturation that occurs in medical schools is so profound that Kaiser thought it would be more expensive to start from scratch than retrain medical graduates. So I couldn't agree more with Julie. I know we're back and forth on this, but we need to completely shift the focus to treat chronic disease, not just the symptoms of chronic disease when they appear, but we need to prevent it in the first place. We need the medical industry to get ahead of the curve. We need people in medicine, top to bottom, to work much more effectively toward the goal of improving overall well-being, health status, and life quality. And that just doesn't happen today. So the AAMC can talk all they want about physician shortages. What we really need is redesign.
Got it. Interesting story about Kaiser. Thanks, Dave. Now let's talk about a possible solution to the physician shortage, one you guys touched on a little bit, and that's educating and training more physician assistants. Changing the name of the profession to physician associates seems to have caused a kerfluffle within organized medicine. And I do think that's the first time we use the word kerfluffle on the roundup. Julie, tell us about the name change and who doesn't like it and why.
First of all, I love the word kerfluffle. It's such a great word. So obviously the Association of PAs and the PAs themselves love this change. The American Medical Association, which is the association for MDs, and the American Osteopathic Association, which is the association for DOs, of course, actively oppose this. And this is not entirely shocking, as the title change could be perceived as PAs achieving greater independence, a title that is closer to what a physician actually does as opposed to an assistant. And when I looked at my own experience, the reasoning is not invalid, but it's ridiculous. It's that the new title could cause consumer confusion about the role of a PA, which could lead to patient safety issues, including medical errors and unnecessary death. I mean, the language that's used in some of these press releases and articles, it's quite dramatic, I'll say. So, you know, I'm not going to waste our time with this line of thinking, really, but instead face the music that physician assistants, just like nurse practitioners, are capable. They're medically trained professionals with a reduced scope of practice. And frankly, if they're deployed properly, they provide incredible leverage for our healthcare system. And by the way, if you know, if the Association of PAs hired a marketing firm to do a multi-year analysis to come out with this title, I am sure that we can do some consumer and patient education to clarify the difference between a physician and a PA and a nurse practitioner. So I decided to do a little research, just a little, on the difference between an MD and a PA. And it is obviously years of training and their scope of practice. PAs have to practice under the supervision in most states of a physician. But PAs actually do get master's degrees after about 3 years of school, and they're trained in the same way. So it's not like they are literally clerical assistants as might have been interpreted by the physician assistant title. Dave, I'll let you talk a little bit more about the NPs perhaps, but when I looked at PAs and MPs, you know, they are very similar in terms of their scope of practice and what they can do. However, NPs go to school for 6 to 8 years, which is a much longer time frame. But frankly, when you look at what they can do and what they get paid, they're pretty neck and neck in terms of what they do for the healthcare system.
Yeah, equating it with unnecessary deaths is quite dramatic. Thanks, Julie. Dave, how does changing the name of physician assistants to physician associates affect competition? How does it affect the supply and demand for doctors? And how does it affect prices for physician services?
it's really much ado about nothing in the sense that physicians just need to get over themselves. And Julie, your comments about the press releases makes me think of another Shakespeare line, "Methinks they doth protest too much." Overall, as we just talked about in the first part of the show, we need to push diagnosis and treatment to the lowest level possible, whenever possible. We need to practice team-based care and human-machine collaboration much more expansively to drive better care and better care outcomes. You know, my wife gets her treatment at Mayo, and we don't worry about whether it's a physician or a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, because I'm sure she's seen them all. It's just Mayo care. There's interdisciplinary and interprofessional cooperation that drives the outcomes. It's part of the reason Mayo is as good as they are at diagnosis and treatment. But most of all, what we need in healthcare in the United States is a shift of focus and resources to reducing the onset of spread and chronic conditions. That's really the big opportunity out there. And if we can manage to prevent chronic disease from manifesting to the extent it does today, we'll reduce the death gap between lower income populations and better off populations. Everybody will feel better, will be more productive, will be happier as a society. So that's the direction we need to go in. And we need to use our business models, our technology, our education, our resource allocation. We need to use everything at our disposal to push in that direction. And it just feels that the two conversations we're having today about physician shortages and title designations, they're like, you know, putting your finger in the dike. The dam is flowing toward better care management, more holistic care management, better health outcomes, alignment between physical and mental health. That's where we need to go. And people that can't get there just need to get out of the way.
Yeah, got to get rid of the guild mentality. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that it's hard to speak ill of doctors today after what we've been through in the last 18 months with just, you know, heroes and saviors. So there is something to be said for building the doctor back up in the minds of young people who are trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives. I appreciate all that. But when you have the associations for these doctors leading our entire industry down the wrong path, it's almost like malpractice. So I agree with Dave 100%.
Thanks, Julie. Any thoughts on other big stories this past week or next?
Well, I'll say that I participated in the United States of Care, which is the nonprofit that Andy Slavitt started when he left CMS. They had a meeting this week and they presented some information on health equity that I hope we start hearing more about, because health equity is about to turn into that phrase that healthcare people use when referring to issues that they don't know how to talk about. And United States of Care did an incredible listening tour that really effectively ended up resulting in the fact that people who are subject to health equity issues don't resonate with the term health equity. So we need to figure out how to engage them. So I hope we start hearing more about that.
Got it. Interesting. Dave, what other news caught your eye this week or you're watching for next week? I mean, kudos for predicting that Supreme Court decision on the ACA.
Well, why don't I put that in the song, Dave? Obamacare is here to stay. That's what all the people say. Healthcare coverage for all. There really is no time to stall. Obamacare will always be. It'll go down in history. So you can hear the entire song at our Foresight Health website. So anyway, I'm happy about that. You might be able to tell.
Clearly, that's great. Anything else on your radar for the week ahead?
I really liked what Julie said about health equity. I think that she's really onto something there. Good job, Julie.
Thanks.
That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on the Healthcare Now Radio Network, iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Subscribe now and don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.